I pulled up the article, read through it, and my stomach just dropped. When you donate your infant's cord blood, their DNA is now walking around in somebody else's body.
Welcome to Genotypecast, a new podcast from Gray Genetics. Genetics isn't always black and white. News stories related to genetics often raise more questions than they answer. On Genotypecast, we bring you insight from genetic counselors. I'm your host, Eleanor Griffith, a certified genetic counselor and the founder of Gray Genetics, an independent telehealth genetic counseling and consulting service.
There's not really anyone requiring this to be added to the fine print. It's on the companies to decide what they want to consider a risk.
My guest today is Brian Kirkpatrick. Brian is a certified genetic counselor and the founder of Watershed DNA, which encompasses a private practice genetic counseling service and also a blog. In her private practice, she focuses on counseling individuals who are considering direct-to-consumer testing, as well as individuals who have been surprised by the results of their direct-to-consumer testing. Brian has also recently co-authored a book, The DNA Guide for Adoptees. The first article we'll be discussing on Genotypecast today is an article from the Chicago Tribune, September 5th, 2019, Umbilical Cord Blood Saved Chicago Woman's Life More Than 20 Years Ago. Now she'll meet the family who donated it. You'll be able to find links to all of the articles that we discuss and also other related articles in the show notes.
I think I was just scrolling Twitter and someone had retweeted something about like, oh, cool, umbilical cord blood.
Yeah. I think I was scrolling my RSS feed.
Yeah, I was like scrolling, then it stopped, and I thought, what? Hang on, let's go back. So I pulled up the article, read through it, and my stomach just dropped. You know that feeling where you just realize, like, this is a much bigger story than even the people in the story realize.
Like, not just kind of like a genetic meet cute.
Exactly. So it is definitely a human interest story that is feel good because everybody involved was happy about the outcome getting to. So what happened was 20 years ago, a woman was treated with a cord blood transplant after treatment for cancer and survived. It was kind of like a last ditch effort. They were going to try this and it worked. And so she lived. No one really thought anything about the baby from whom the umbilical cord blood came. And so fast forward to present time, the woman decides to do ancestry testing.
Like millions of other people.
Right. Not even thinking about this transplant she had in the past. And her results came back and she was matching to strangers. It wasn't people in her family. And her top match was reported as a parent-child match. And it was a woman. So she was matching this woman that is reported as either her mother or daughter, and she knew something was not right.
She was quite sure she knew her biological mother actually was.
Right. And so she started messaging with this person who was matched to her as her mother or daughter, and they kind of put all the pieces together and figure out that the baby was the son of this woman she was matching. And he was now, you know, 20 years old, 19 or 20 years old. And his DNA was the one that was detected by the ancestry test. And how this happens is a buccal sample or a saliva sample that you submit to an ancestry testing company, it contains the epithelial cells that line the inside of the cheeks. And that should be original DNA for this particular woman. And then also the white blood cells that, because of the stem cell transplant, the cord blood transplant, are containing the DNA of the donor. So it was a mixture of her DNA, but the testing company only detected or reported back the DNA profile for the donor. And if you look through all the different ancestry testing companies, fine print and their FAQs where they address people who've received a stem cell transplant.
They say don't do it.
They have a recommendation that says don't do our testing, but they don't say why.
Yeah.
And most of the time it's because the test fails because I've looked into this for other cases in the past. And if the test isn't meeting certain quality control levels. Like there's, if they can detect a mixed sample, they think that there's been some sort of contamination, I guess you'd put it, like contamination of the sample, and so they've just failed the test. But now we have another explanation for why this is probably not a good idea for people who've received a stem cell transplant to do the testing, because it's giving, you know, the wrong results, essentially. Right. And so for this particular family, because they were able to figure it out and they could tell right away that there wasn't any sort of like, you know, monkey business going on, it wasn't some unveiling of a deeply held family secret, they realized that it was because of the cord blood transplant. But I because of how many people I work with are making discoveries of, you know, not the parent expected, non-paternity in the genetic counseling world is what we tend to call it. But there's so many people that are doing consumer tests like ancestry testing, discovering that they're not matching family how they should, and then it's kind of a ripple effect throughout the family. So
yeah, I imagine if she'd happened to match to someone who seemed like a different biological father as opposed to a different biological mother, she might have leapt to different assumptions too.
Right. Yeah, and I went to the Be the Match website to look into the information they provide about, you know, risks and benefits to cord blood banking, like donating your cord blood to Be the Match registry. And all of the risks are associated with like medical or health concerns, but no mention of the fact that when you donate your infant's cord blood, their DNA is now walking around in somebody else's body if the transplant works. And, you know, in most situations, there's not going to be any negative outcome when that happens, but just implications on a societal level, you know, times millions of people, you can't guarantee that someone who survives with a cord blood transplant is not going to commit a crime, and then it gets pegged on the wrong person. You know, there's all sorts of implications on a grander level,
right,
just from this one particular family's situation.
I would imagine that those risks on Be the Match's website haven't been updated in years, but ancestry testing has been a big thing for long enough that it seems very overdue.
Right. So, and I don't think at this point it's because they don't realize that this is happening and has happened and can happen. But there's not really anyone requiring this to be added to the fine print. You know what I mean? Like, it's on the companies to decide what they want to consider a risk. So yeah, it's concerning, which is one of the reasons that I wrote a blog post about it, because I want other genealogists and genetic counselors and people who read my blog to be aware of this one more reason that an unexpected match can show up. Because we weren't really thinking, I wasn't thinking about
it. Yeah, this is not one that would have occurred to me. And then it's like, oh yeah, of course, I guess that makes sense. It's right. Not even a general screening question. I guess when asking about a patient's, you know, personal and family history, you would think that that would come up, but I wouldn't necessarily think to say like, have you ever had a stem cell transplant as a standalone question, whereas that should probably be routine.
Right. And also on the flip side, asking somebody, have you ever donated? Or,
right.
You know, I guess a lot of people, young people, may not know if their parents opted to donate their umbilical cord blood, because we haven't really had donations for a very long time, you know, maybe a couple of decades. And so this really seems to be an issue that's only going to be affecting younger people at this point in time. Mm-hmm. And a lot of those people will not know one way or the other if their parent donated their umbilical cord blood or not.
And I imagine like this this individual's mother, you know, she just kind of forgot. And I imagine that's pretty, yeah, just like people hear about newborn screening maybe and then promptly forget, you know, if like nothing comes of it. And like, you know, you don't think about your umbilical cord. Most people don't spend a lot of time thinking about it. Their children's
right.
umbilical
and cord. And when you're presented with the options of you know, well, we're just going to throw this in the medical waste, or we could use this to save somebody's life. I mean, it is a very strong, it's easy to understand why there would be a quick yes consent to that and then move on to making all of the other decisions that you have to make when you have a newborn. And then all that comes after that with caring for a newborn. I mean, it's easy to understand that a parent wouldn't remember.
Right. And then there's another article that you shared with me that I hadn't come across on my own, not related to stem cell donations, but other donor issues. It's an article in the Washington Post related to children who'd been conceived with the help of a sperm donor, where they all had used a common sperm donor. And then there's a cluster of autism and other, yes, other issues among those children.
Yes. And I want to write a more lengthy blog post about this particular article because there's so many different issues that it brings up. One of them is, you know, recontact and updating medical histories and how difficult that is, and if not impossible, that is for children who are donor conceived, because not the information is not kept up to date. And in most situations, it's not always accurately reported, whether that's intentional on the part of the donor or this particular situation. Where was it?
It was hard to tell in this article. It's hard to tell. Is this like a crazy guy who just wants to donate his sperm as much as possible?
Right.
Or was he just making some extra cash? You know, there's no indication from the article that he necessarily has signs of autism himself, which is completely possible that he carries variants that he passed on that ended up resulting in autism, even though that seems less likely. I mean, it's interesting how I didn't know offhand that the guidelines for the Society for Assisted Reproductive Technology only mandates genetic testing for cystic fibrosis.
Right.
I did know that, you know, most clinics do broader genetic testing, but there's so much. I mean, like, the reason it said that the family history is the first genetic test is there's so much of significance that can, you know, potentially come up in family history too, where there wouldn't be like a test that's necessarily helpful.
Right. And one of the points that was made in the article is that when one of the mothers of the boys with autism tried to alert the cryobank that there was this medical problem with her children, and, you know, they should put a red flag on that particular donor, they said, well, we don't have enough information, therefore there's nothing we have to do about it.
Or they said, like, not, like, no evidence, right? Like, she didn't have evidence that, so totally shut down.
This isn't the first situation where I've heard of a donor or somebody reporting back information to the cryobank or the sperm donor bank, and it doesn't get transmitted forward. Because I had someone reach out to me who was an egg donor, and she found out that she had autosomal dominant PKD, polycystic kidney disease. And this was after she had already donated her eggs. And that's a, you know, dominant condition. So she contacts the bank and tells them, I have this dominant condition. All of my eggs are 50-50 chance. And so you need to pass that along. Well, she told me that she was told by the bank, well, we never ended up using your eggs, so don't worry about it. Well, fast forward a couple of years, and she does ancestry testing, ends up matching two of her donor offspring. And
wow.
They were not aware they were donor egg conceived. And they also were not aware that they had this risk for polycystic kidney disease. So it's unclear if the bank passed the information along to the parents and the parents just didn't pass it along to their child because they hadn't told their child they were donor conceived, or where, you know, somewhere along that process of the information getting to where it needed to be, it didn't make it there.
I feel like either the sperm bank, you know, either it's an outright lie or they're disorganized and incompetent. And I'm not sure which one is more disturbing.
Right. It's, and people who are donor conceived have been bringing up these issues for many years, mm-hmm. And have been ignored. And it's only because of, the DNA testing is starting to unveil sperm donors. And finally, there's this realization on the part of, reproductive medicine and the cryobanks themselves that, oh no, like things are changing. We're no longer in control. We're no longer in power. How are we going to handle this? And so it's leading to things like cease and desist letters are getting sent to people who are trying to make contact with the donors. And I don't know. From the genetic counselor perspective, we understand how family history is an ongoing, changing thing. And it's important to make sure that people are aware of their genetic origins and their biological family medical history. And it's just hard to see that information, which we see the information as so powerful, it's just not getting to where it needs to be. What can we do to make that different?
And I think, there's no profit business incentive for sperm banks to do a better job with that, I guess, unless they're thinking really long term in terms of not being highlighted in one of these articles. But it's nicer just to say, like, we have tall, attractive sperm donors for you.
Yeah. Things are changing so quickly, and I don't see that everyone's keeping up with the pace of change.
Do you think that's because they haven't gotten around to it, or they don't care, or it's expensive, or it's not in their interest?
Probably a combination of all of those. Plus, no one really knows what to do.
Right.
everyone's kind of looking to each other. Sending cease and desist letters, I don't think is the right thing to do. Encouraging past clients and customers to know about the changes in the way people are being discovered by DNA testing, and I guess supporting them and sharing that news ahead of being discovered, that would not be in their best interest to, make their clients and customers aware of the fact that they can no longer guarantee the promises that they once were able to make.
If you are a certified genetic counselor and would like to come on GenotypeCast to talk about an issue related to genetics in the news, send an email to podcast@graygenetics.com.
The information contained in this podcast does not constitute medical advice and is also not a substitute for genetic counseling. Neither Gray Genetics nor any of its guests makes any representation or warranty as to the accuracy or completeness of the statements or any information contained in this podcast. Evaluation of an individual's personal and family health history is a crucial part of genetic counseling and any recommendations.